Second hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on this beautiful Friday morning here in Middle Tennessee. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Greg Wyshynski, you can find his work on ESPN, ESPN.com, does a great job as always. He's on the line with us. Greg, how you doing?
Doing well, thanks. Appreciate
big,
it.
Big one down in Tampa tonight. All eyes here in Nashville will be watching as the Lightning will host the Stars. There is something at stake before the Predators host the Hurricanes tomorrow night at Bridgestone Arena. We have found out that Curtis McElhinney will be in between the pipes. It will not be Vasilevsky. Dallas has Tampa tonight, and then they will be in Chicago Sunday and Monday night against the Blackhawks. Ultimately, how do you see this fourth spot in the Central playing out?
I see it as Nashville having like a 96% chance of making the playoffs right now. So you got to play the percentages and say it's going to be them. I mean, you know, the thing about Dallas is that it's maybe all just catching up to them. You know, they've had to play so many games in such a short period of time throughout this entire season just because of the COVID interruption that they had at the beginning of the season. And then, you know, their state breaking basically due to an ice storm that kept them off the ice for even more time. And, you know, you combine that with the amount of hockey they played in the postseason last year. It's kind of a veteran team in some places. And you can just kind of see the stress and strain of all of this hockey finally catching up with them. I mean, their last five games, they've managed to get a couple of loser points, but they've not won in regulation. You know, obviously you come into this game with Tampa tonight if you're them and you seeing Vasilevsky, but I still think it's pretty straightforward that the Predators are going to be able to secure that fourth spot.
Do you believe Carolina's probably going to win the President's Trophy? Do you believe they are the team to beat going into to postseason play? Are you going to predict Carolina to get to the Stanley Cup final? How do you feel about the Hurricanes?
I feel that they're garbage because they killed me on the puck line last night. Oh my God. One nothing against Chicago and the entirety of the game, and then they give up a goal to Chicago, and then they finally lose in overtime. I mean, oh, it was a brutal one, boys. But, yeah.
I had that same feeling with San Jose the other night, Greg.
Yeah, it was a bad scene. But, no, I think they are a tremendous team. They've been building towards this for a while. Rod Brind'Amour, their coach, has them play outstanding hockey on both ends of the ice. Really meticulously put together. There's a lot of things around this team that you have to like, not only the strength of their blue line, which has been the case for years, but also just the low-key offensive stardom that you get from guys like Aho and Svechnikov when he's on. Just a really fun team to watch, and a team that's starting to be able to beat you in a number of different ways. I think, you know, offensively this team can do well, but defensively for the last couple of years, I think they're a team that is sneaky great. Like, they're the kind of team where you look up and all of a sudden you realize that you haven't gotten a shot on goal against them in 10 minutes just because they haven't given you the puck. They're legit. They're very good. And I kind of like the fact they didn't trade one of the goalies at the deadline, the fact that they're going to have a kind of a three-headed monster coming into the postseason and hoping that one of them can catch fire and be the guy.
You know, we've talked to you over the years when we get to postseason play, and that's what's beautiful about Stanley Cup playoffs is it's so unpredictable. It's so hard to predict who's going to win. There's a lot of upsets, and you know it's never chalk. Hardly ever is it chalk in hockey. So with that being said, who do you think is on upset alert? I'll just give you let's just for the sake of this conversation go with the top teams today. So Carolina, Vegas, Pittsburgh, Toronto. Of those four teams, who is most prone to be upset first, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, it's always Toronto. until proven otherwise, right? I mean, like, we all have these grand designs saying this could be the year for them and how great it is they can avoid seeing Boston until the Final Four if they see him at all. But it's still the Leafs, and it's still a team that finds new and exciting ways to disappoint their fan base, even in years where it looks like they're going to be, you know, primed to maybe finally win a championship. But joking aside, I mean, I think it's got to be Pittsburgh or whoever finishes in first place in the East. That division is, to me, very tightly packed. not a lot of separation between the top four teams. I mean, granted, like the Islanders right now are having a real struggle in almost every facet of their game, especially offensively. So maybe if you catch them, you maybe get a bit of a weaker opponent at this point. But, you know, I just think when it comes to Pittsburgh, the Capitals, Boston, the Islanders, if they're playing okay, there's not too much separation between any of those teams. I'd be legitimately surprised if Vegas was beaten by the Blues, and I'd be somewhat surprised if Carolina doesn't make it out of the first round.
Okay, so let's see how you answer this one. So of the four seeds that are going to get in, they're going to have to obviously play the one seed in their division. Who do you give the best chance of pulling off the upset? Montreal, the Islanders, the Blues, or the Predators?
Well, I would have to go with the Islanders only because the thing about them is that even when they're playing poorly, they're going to be able to hang tight in games because of the anti-hockey that they play in the postseason of trying to keep these games so close and so low scoring. And, you know, if you get a great performance from a Semyon Varlamov, then you can maybe beat anybody. So I still think I would probably lean towards them as the team that can be most prone to for an upset just because of the style in which they play. But, you know, the one I would be intrigued by, even though I think Vegas is an exponentially better team, would be that Blues-Vegas series, if only because of some of the interesting dynamics, the Alex Pietrangelo leaving the, you know, Blues to go to Vegas after the Blues didn't want him. And, you know, you have a redemption arc for Jordan Binnington in that series because he was absolute trash in the playoffs last year and is trying to kind of redeem himself to be a, you know, seen as a great postseason goalie, which he was a couple of years ago when they won the Cup. So there's a lot going on in that series beyond just the X's and O's on the ice. So I'm not saying they could pull the upset, but I'm intrigued by it.
Greg Wyshynski is with us. And Greg, you wrote a really good column about some things to look for as you move towards the playoffs here. One thing that's intrigued me, because, you know, Darren was asking you about Carolina. You know, we've seen all three of these teams, Florida, Carolina, and Tampa. They're all so impressive in their own way, but Tampa has got the stuff, to me. They've got more things that have to sort of fall into place quickly as they get Kucherov reacclimated. They got to work Stamkos back in now. They've lost him for a good while. If it all falls right, they've got the best team, I think, because they've got Vasilevsky. They've already climbed the mountain. But don't you think there's a little bit of a, in the first round, especially if they play Florida, which it looks very likely. In fact, isn't it interesting? The most likely scenario is, knock on wood, or keep your fingers crossed if you're a Predator fan, that they close it out. But it would be Carolina and Nashville, who play twice to end the season, and Florida and Tampa, who play twice leading into the postseason. But that's a little bit of a tough trick to pull if you're Tampa, I think, facing such a tough team in the first round.
It is, and I mean, a team that is obviously looking to take a chunk off you, too. I mean, as the weaker sibling in that state. This is going to be the first all-Florida playoff series we've ever had since these teams entered the league in the early 1990s. So this is very cool. We've been waiting a long time to see this kind of rivalry blossom between the Panthers and Lightning. Problem is that, you know, I looked back at it. Did you know the Florida Panthers failed to qualify for the playoffs during the entirety of George W. Bush's presidency? Like, this is the kinds of droughts that we're looking at when it comes to this franchise and making the playoffs. It's going to be a great series. And like you said, the big mystery is, what are the Tampa Bay Lightning? How quickly does Kucherov get acclimated to playing again after sitting out the entire of regular season? You know, Stamkos, we not only are you wondering, you know, what it's going to be like when he gets back, you're also wondering how long he'll be back for, because inevitably he's going to get hurt again, right? If the playoffs. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, they are loaded from top to bottom, still probably the best roster in hockey, and every bit capable of defending as Stanley Cup champion with, for my money, the best defenseman and the best goalie in the league in Victor Hedman and Andrei Vasilevsky, respectively. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they are in the first round. But, you know, as I wrote today, there's there's just a part of me that wants to see if they could pull it off. I mean, the audacity of a team being able to not have a former MVP for the entirety of the regular season, still make the playoffs, and then get him back, and all the while it's the accidental flex of like all the salary cap space they were able to get that they needed is by putting their best player on the shelf. Like the whole thing is just so audacious. I just want to see if they can pull it off.
Well, that does bring to mind something, Greg, that a lot of us have looked at, and I don't know specifically. I don't think I have a proposal right in a counter, but we also remember this. Patrick Kane broke his leg in 2015, and they put him on the shelf, and they said he's out for the season. And in the meantime, that gave them the cap space to trade for a couple of guys, right? They traded, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It was the center from the Coyotes, good faceoff guy. I don't know why. It was a good solid third line center. Not a superstar or anything, but they added some pieces. And then, oh my goodness, Patrick Kane's ready to go. He's okay, and he's ready to go for the playoff series in the first round against the Predators. And he, you know, he played great. They went ahead and won the whole thing. They made moves that they wouldn't have been able to make had they not been able to use that loophole. And it's like right. You're saying with Kucherov, they didn't intentionally do this, but at the same time, they were able to keep their team together and not have to suffer any consequences for not having him, right? Or not have to make further moves. They were very smart in using what's available to them. Is that a flaw in the system in your mind, Greg? Is that something that needs to be looked at, or is that, hey, this is just how you play the game?
Yeah, I don't think it's a flaw. I mean, it's clearly a loophole. It's clearly, you know, a workaround that teams have. But I think where the NHL has taken issue with teams maybe trying to circumvent the cap or whatever you'd call this type of situation is, you know, I think they look at this differently because at the end of the day, it's a team losing a really good player from their lineup, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're trying to cheat the system by, you know, giving out those contracts that we saw where they bring down the minimum value of it.
Yeah, the 15-year deal.
Yeah. That's the kind of thing they frowned upon. By the way, I also didn't have a problem with that either. I think that's just smartly working the system as well. But then again, I'm a Devils fan who saw them get destroyed for the Kovalchuk contract. But I think when it comes to this, like, you're losing Patrick Kane, right? And you're losing Nikita Kucherov. Like, you're clearly sacrificing something towards this cap flexibility. And I think as long as that's happening, the NHL has less issue with it than it would in other situations.
So, Greg, let's put aside the conspiracy theory and all of the stuff with Tom Wilson. if you'd asked me a week ago, even when the Rangers were, I guess, on the verge of being eliminated, I would have said, hey, tough division. They've got the pieces in place. Young team. A lot to like, right? Just need to add a little bit here, add a little bit there. And all of a sudden, boom, the general manager and the president are gone a week later. And the story that's coming out is, oh, no, it wasn't the statement and the fine and all that stuff that, you know, we just didn't like where it was going. What happened there?
Well, it's the great equalizer. It's James Dolan.
I guess that is the answer, right?
Yeah, that's the agent of chaos inserted into this otherwise logical situation. And, you know, from what I've called around the league in the last couple of days to try to get a sense of what's going on, there's no question that the current urban legend in the NHL is that, you know, Dolan didn't like Gorton, maybe even on a personal level, felt the Rangers should be in a different place than where they are, contending for the playoffs this season. Didn't like the meticulous way that Gorton wanted to continue to approach this team, wanted to be more aggressive, and frankly didn't like the fact that this roster had been embarrassed by the Islanders and the Capitals from a physicality standpoint in the last few weeks. So you add all that up.
That's something that could be fixed from this year to the next year, right? You could work that in.
Completely. But if you also want all these changes to happen and also don't like the guy that's, you know, going to make them, then you know, you act if you're James Dolan. Now, the thing I was going to say is that, you know, John Davidson part of this, John Davidson, the team president, also left the Rangers this week. The urban legend around the league right now is that Dolan wanted to fire Gorton. JD's like, I don't think that's right, and then they're both gone. But the other thing I heard that was interesting, too, is this, you know, kind of speaks to the eventual move that they made. If you spend all your time talking about how the second in command, in this case Chris Drury, is the golden boy. Like, they wouldn't let him interview anywhere. They wanted to keep him on staff. They created a position, associate general manager, for him so he can get a raise and stick around. if you keep saying over and over and over and over again how important this guy is, at some point, if your boss doesn't like you, he's going to be like, well, why isn't this guy the GM? You know, so like, I think there might have been a little bit of that too, insofar as like moving forward with the team, but the timing of it stunk in with regard to that statement. I don't think there's any way you can get around the conspiratorial theories about it, but it does very much just sound like James Dolan being impatient and, you know, just like Tom Wilson did Tom Wilson things on Monday, James Dolan did a James Dolan thing on Wednesday.
Antoine Vermette is the guy I was thinking of, the center that they traded for in 2015 that they picked up. While Patrick Kane, well, they had the cap space down the stretch to get it.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. We're talking to Greg Wyshynski of ESPN here on Darren Donick and Chase. And, you know, with the Tom Wilson stuff and the game on Wednesday, obviously it brought a lot of notoriety to the NHL, maybe for the wrong reasons, but people were paying attention because of what happened. And I'm curious just from your point of view as somebody that covers the league on a daily basis, the league's coming to your network starting next year, from just a popularity standpoint is the way to put it. Where do you think the NHL is right now as they get ready to go in the playoffs, coming on the other side of the pandemic, and then being able to start a new TV deal next year? Where do you think they're at with all that?
Yeah, you know, it's a complicated question because I think that the NHL is one of those properties that suffers by not having fans in the buildings. I think it's always been a sport that is at its best insofar as attracting new fans through the live experience versus anything that you see on television. And, you know, I think when you have a packed building, when you have the chants and the cheers and the roars and the spontaneous reactions to things that happen on the ice is really when the total experience of watching a hockey game is at its apex. So, you know, hopefully we get back there next season and it's a bit better. But, you know, the game's in a really interesting place. I think where the Tom Wilson thing, and I wrote about this week, laid bare the problem with the NHL right now, which is that they're kind of in a purgatory of their own making. Like, they're so tethered to the old ways. You know, the fact that this was a league built on violence and built on physicality for decades and decades and decades. And now they're at a point where it feels like the game wants to be more offensive. It wants to be more about skating and skill. It wants to be more Connor McDavid than Tom Wilson. And where the league is okay, you know, you could kind of push it in that direction. Like, you could make rules changes. You could do things that would prohibit what we saw on Monday and Wednesday from happening if you wanted to, if you really wanted to push it in the other direction. And I wonder if that's not what they should do, considering how exciting this young generation of players is, considering what the young generation of fans might want to see rather than see, like, the Tom Wilson stuff. It's a real kind of, like, crisis of conscience, I think, for the NHL right now insofar as, like, what the sport will eventually be. And also, like, if they did push it in that direction, how many fans they'd end up alienating who do prefer a more physical and violent style of game.
So what are some things now that, you know, after this Stanley Cup final, they're going to be on two networks. They'll be on ESPN. They'll be on Turner. They'll have that reach, you know, from those two companies. What are some things that you think the league can continue to do that, you know, will help with the growth now that they have, and they're moving into the digital age too, where you can stream a lot of these games, and so the cord cutters will be able to watch? What are some things that you could see changing and that they could do to help the growth and the popularity?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, which is availability. I think hockey fans have always been the most tech savvy of the big four. You can go back, you know, in the last decade and just see the way that hockey fans have used social media and video and all sorts of things to really enhance their experience with watching hockey. But, you know, one of the things that I'm the most excited about is, you know, the gambling aspect. We kind of talked about the puck line off the top of the show. But to me, you know, the popularity of sports in the U.S. is not coincidentally tied to how easy it is and how fun it is to bet on them, like football and March Madness and things like that. And, you know, there isn't a whole lot of education right now with fans as to how to bet hockey. And the idea that we're getting to a place where you could have your phone in one hand and then the minute overtime starts, you could be betting on the players you think could score the game-winning goal and stuff like that. I mean, the depth and breadth of what to bet on and the immediacy of it and the availability of it I think it's just going to change how people approach hockey as a sport. I mean, we could talk all we want about rules changes and young superstars and, you know, McDavid and Matthews and all this other stuff. But the bottom line is that if you and your buddies are at a bar and you turn to your friend who's never watched a hockey game and you're like, you can bet on 100 different things this period, you might watch it.
And you might get some new fans out of it, right?
Precisely. Like, to me, and I've been writing about hockey, like, you know, forever, you know, it's always been about create as many entry points to the sport as you possibly can, because people don't play it and people don't know the rules and they think it's kind of weird and alien and Canadian, you know, and the more ways that you create entry points for fans, whether it's because you like watching a certain team or a certain player or because you like to bet on it or anything, like, it's just going to make it finally achieve the popularity that every hockey fan, you know, believes it can and hopes that it can. And I truly believe that as we get more into puck and player tracking and getting more data and information from games that these sports books can create prop bets on and stuff like that, it's going to really open up this game to completely new audiences. And I know the betting thing scares people. I know it's not ever for everybody. I know that there's a certain demonization of it. But it's undeniable that, you know, like I said, the more popular sports in the U.S. are clearly the ones that generate much more gambling revenue than the NHL does. And I think that's going to change dramatically in the next decade.
I'll tell you this, Greg. I was out in Vegas earlier this week and was watching games Monday at a sports book, the Circa. If you haven't been there, I highly recommend it. It was awesome. And you know, obviously the Knights were playing that night, so there were a good contingent of Golden Knights fans that were there to watch, but I'd hear the Bruins would score and you'd hear some cheers and there were people there watching all of the games and obviously placing bets. But I think you're right. I think that is going to be a big way that you're going to see a growth. And then also, you know, I mentioned the digital part of, you know, having ESPN Plus be like a WWE network where you can go watch old games or, you know, different exclusive things, I think is huge too.
Yeah. And, you know, not to talk about us or Turner or any of that stuff, I've just said for years that having the National Hockey League on multiple networks in the U.S. was always the key. And you know, to have it just monolithically be on one network was never what the sport should have done. You know, you look at baseball and basketball and the NFL, and it's multiple networks reaching different audiences through different ways. And I think this is such a great – it's a great time for hockey fans to be able to have it on two different networks and really reach audiences. You know, whether you're watching Around the Horn or AEW, you know, you're going to see an advertisement for the National Hockey League next season.
Yeah, and I think it'll be cool for sure. Greg, always good to talk to you, and we will hey, it's almost playoff time. We'll do it again soon.
You got it. Take care.
Greg Wyshynski, ESPN, joining us. Always appreciate the conversations with him. There's more to get into with the NHL, but first I got to talk to you about bets. He brought up gambling. I was out in Vegas. I actually went to a BetMGM sportsbook, so that was a lot of fun to experience that. But baseball players, you know, they don't always get the style points for the home runs, but if you're a better, you sure can. New BetMGM customers can turn $1 into $100 when someone goes yard during a game. Sign up for the BetMGM app using the code 1025GAME100, and if you place a $1 moneyline wager on the Braves or the Phillies, you'll get $100 if either team hits a home run. After the baseball has left the park, there's no reason to leave your seat. Discover all that BetMGM has to offer with their innovative parlay selection builders, daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and much more. I take advantage of all those things all the time. Download the app or go to BetMGM.com. Use that bonus code 1025GAME100 to win $100 when you bet on the Braves or the Phillies and either team hits a home run. Swing for the fences with BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. New customer offer, paid in free bets. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789.